This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around for a breakdown of the day's top stories across Chicago and Illinois later in the episode. But first, we are just a week away from a big change that's raising a lot of questions for immigrant families across the country and right here at home. Some people who came to the United States through the Family Reunification Program could lose their legal status and will need to leave. What makes matters worse is they were only recently notified of this change. Here's how a local woman is processing the news from her lawyer.
Unfortunately, the only thing that we know now is that you have to leave the country on January 14th. I mean, 3 weeks. What you can do in 3 weeks, like organize your life in 3 weeks?
The Trump administration claims the program's been riddled with fraud. So what does this mean for people affected? And what happens next? We sat down with Nicole Hallett, clinical professor of law and director of the Immigrants' Rights Clinic at the University of Chicago Law School. She started our conversation off with just what family reunification is and how it works.
So one of the primary ways that someone can come to the United States and to resettle permanently is by being sponsored by a family member. And there are some categories of family members that can come to the United States immediately. So if you get married to a U.S. citizen, mm-hmm. that person can apply to come to the United States immediately. But there are other categories of family members where there is a wait list. There are only a certain number of visas available per year, and there are more people who are applying than there are slots. And so people in those categories often have to wait many years in order to be eligible to come to the United States, even when they have an eligible family member. Mm. So what this program did is it allowed people who were in that backlog, who were waiting for a visa, to apply for something called parole to come to the United States on a temporary basis and, in essence, wait in the United States for a visa to become available. And so this was a program, actually, that was not started under Biden. It was started under the Obama administration, but the number of countries that it applied to was expanded under Biden. And so there, as you said, there were multiple Latin American countries where if you were waiting and were eligible for a visa, but for the wait list,
yes.
you could be paroled in the country in order to do that waiting inside the United States.
See, tell us more about what happened in the Biden era. It was essentially streamlined. Right?
Well, it was streamlined, and you have to be from a certain list of countries in order to be eligible. As you know, there are more, 200 plus countries in the world. This
right.
was for seven particular countries, and they were for countries where there were many, many people who were waiting.
And let's list the seven. It's Cuba, Honduras, Haiti, Colombia, El Salvador, Guatemala, and Ecuador.
Correct. And those are countries that at the time that the Biden administration expanded the program, we're seeing high rates of people coming to the border without status and trying to enter the country that way. And it was one of several programs that the Biden administration put into place in order to encourage people to exercise lawful pathways to come to the United States rather than trying to cross the border illegally. And
right.
so the idea is these are individuals who will eventually be able to come to the United States legally. We don't want them to, in an act of desperation, try to cross the border illegally. We're trying to prevent that. And so we are going to institute a process that allows them to come legally, even though they still have to wait before they can get their green card inside the United States.
So if we're making all these changes to make sure that folks come the legal route, come to the United States legally, what is the Trump administration alleging here? They're saying that there's been fraud and that the vetting process isn't robust. Is there truth to that, Nicole?
There is not truth to that that I am aware of. Now, of course, in any program, there are going to be instances of fraud. So I'm not going to suggest that there has never been an instance of fraud. But in order to be granted parole, the individual had to prove that they would be eligible to come in and get a green card, if not for the fact that they were on the wait list. Mm-hmm. And the vetting, it was very similar in terms of this program versus the permanent resettlement process that they would have had to wait for had they had to wait in their home
country. Which is a pretty stringent process.
It's a very stringent process. Again, not that there aren't instances of fraud, but in general, there is a very, very robust vetting process, and that applies for people in this program. It applies to basically anyone at this point who's entering the United States.
Right. And so we're clear then. Walk us through the changes that Trump is making right now.
So the Trump administration has targeted a number of different programs that have allowed people to enter the United States on parole. Parole is a kind of status. It's a temporary status that allows someone to come with the permission of the U.S. government. The Biden administration had several different parole programs that were put into place. Several of them had already been canceled, and this was one of the final ones that was still in place. But essentially, there are individuals who entered on this family reunification parole program who are still waiting and cannot yet apply for a green card because they're still in that backlog.
Right.
And what the Trump administration has said is they can no longer wait in the United States. They have to leave the United States and then wait in their home country for that visa to become available. And as you can imagine, these are individuals, many of whom have been here for years. Mm-hmm. They came here under the assumption that they would stay here forever, right? They have the intent to permanently resettle here.
Right, they built lives.
Exactly. And so these are not people who came temporarily with the expectation that they would ever have to leave. And now they do. And they have to leave within a very short time period, by the middle of January. And this was just announced in December. So this is very disruptive for many people who came here on this program.
Well, let's hear a little bit firsthand here. We talked with a local woman from Ecuador. She came to the U.S. about a year and a half ago with this family reunification parole. Now, she is using the pseudonym Carolina to protect her immigration application. Here's a little bit of what she had to say about the initial decision to apply to come here.
I can live again with my family. I can see my family again. I can work and I can do my life. And I can wait for the residency there. So I was really happy about it. So I told my mom, yes, sure, let's do it. And she was okay. And the things and all the documentation were really fast because I have to do it like in 6 months. And then they sent me the letter saying, yes, you can come to the United States. So I had to do everything in my country. I quit my job. I left my apartment. I left everything there. And I mean, it's hard because you are on your mind, you are saying, okay, I got to do everything again, but it's fine because I'm going to be with my family and everything will be fine. But now it's like, okay, you have to go back again and start again. So it's really hard.
Wow. There's that real life example of what you just talked about, Nicole, the uprooting and then rebuilding your life, which is a huge strain for anyone. And this is not just Carolina we're talking about, right? Tell us more about what you're hearing from clients.
Well, I'm hearing from clients in many of these programs that have been canceled, and they really feel like it's a bait and switch. They came how they considered the right way. They followed the rules that were set out for them at the time, and now they're being treated like they did something wrong. And they really are being faced with a difficult decision because some people will make the decision to go home and wait there and then hopefully come back to the United States at some future point. Some people probably will make the decision that that's too disruptive and they're going to take their chances by remaining in the United States without status. Mm-hmm. That actually will threaten their ability to eventually get their green card because they'll be out of status for a period of time. And so really people are left with two bad options.
Right.
And, you know, you can look at the numbers, you can say how many thousand people are going to be affected by this, but like the person that was interviewed, these are real people whose lives are being upended, and it's a real tragedy in many cases.
So Carolina, she was approved to live and work in the U.S. until 2027 while she waits for her residency application to be considered. We all know, you know, that's not a sure thing, but here's a little bit more from her about just that process.
I mean, if they don't want us here, okay, you can stay here until 27. That's the thing that I know. And I will be fine with that. But not like in 3 weeks.
I'm curious, Nicole, what do you think it is here? Why is the Trump administration making this move now? What comes to mind for you? Rather than just waiting till the end of people's parole, why cut it in the middle?
I think the honest answer is that they do not like these programs. I think in general, the Trump administration does not believe that parole should be used in this way. And so they are sort of going through all of the different programs that both the Biden administration and previous administrations put into place and canceling them one by one. So I don't know why this particular program was canceled in December of 2025 versus earlier in the year or later. But I do think that they're systematically going through each program and deciding to end it. And this is very consistent with what they've done with other parole programs where people have authorized periods of stay. Mm-hmm. It seems to people like they have been made a promise that they can stay at least until that point. That's sort of an assumption that I think most people would make. But the truth of the matter is that the law gives the administration very broad authority to cancel parole at any time for any reason. Now, there are some legal challenges to some of the programs being ended. I don't know whether this one has been challenged yet. It may be. But in general, the Supreme Court has been allowing these cancellations to go forward.
That broad authority kind of allows them to do this type of thing without taking the actual people affected into consideration.
Yes. And I think that this speaks to a larger problem, which is that our immigration laws are extremely outdated and Congress has not passed immigration reform since the 1990s. And so administrations have been using these temporary pathways in order to try to solve some of the problems that are present in the system. The danger with that, of course, is then when you have an administration change and we have an administration as a policy matter is against these sorts of temporary statuses, you leave people in the lurch and really, you know, affects people's lives in ways that they might not have anticipated when they decided to come, believing that they were going to be able to stay for a particular period of time.
Here's Carolina one more time.
I'm not a criminal. I'm not undocumented. I did everything right. I followed the rules that they said. And now it's just like they are saying nope. And that for me doesn't make sense because my process from the residence is still, you know. So in some point, they will interview me for the residency. So then I have to come back again. So that's the thing that I don't understand.
So many more questions than answers. I mean, do you anticipate more efforts, Nicole, to chip away at all the legal pathways available to immigrants right now?
I do expect that it has been the pattern over the last 11, 12 months.
That the Trump administration is not done here. There's more.
Absolutely. There are other programs that could be targets. And I think, you know, she says in her interview that she's not undocumented, which is true. All of these people who came on temporary programs, they're not undocumented. They had legal status. Mm-hmm. It was a temporary status. But what the Trump administration is doing is it is taking large categories of people and rendering them undocumented if they decide to stay. By some estimates, up to 1 million people who had legal status under the late Biden administration now are either leaving or have to leave or making the decision to fall into the undocumented population. This is a problem that is going to need a systemic solution. Congress is going to have to get involved. But that seems to be a very remote possibility right now. And I expect expect that over the next few years, at least until we see another change of administration, mm-hmm. we're going to see further erosion of the pathways for immigrants to come to the United States and further cancellation of programs that allow immigrants to stay.
And so we're clear, if someone decides to stay beyond January 14th, which is next week, someone on this family reunification parole program, what happens? They're at that point considered here illegally.
They will lose their work authorization. So if they continue to work, they would have to do so illegally. Mm-hmm. And they would be subject to arrest, detention, and deportation. And as you probably know, the efforts to arrest undocumented immigrants has really ramped up across the country, and in particular in Chicago.
Right.
And so they are at a very severe risk of losing their liberty, potentially spending months in detention and then being deported, which would create further issues if they want to return. So again, there really are no good solutions. She can pick up in a week and pack up her life here and move back home, which is a very extreme hardship for most people. You can imagine if you had to pick up and leave your home in 1 week.
Oh, yes.
Or they can stay and risk something even worse happening in the mm-hmm. future and potentially lose the ability to apply for a permanent status later on down the road.
Before I let you go, Nicole, any resources you want to point folks to just if they need answers to some of these questions?
One thing I would suggest is that if there are individuals who are in this situation, they should be speaking with a lawyer immediately to see if there's some other application they can file to potentially remain in the United States, even though their parole is ended. So this is not a situation in which you should be making decisions without all of the information. There are nonprofits that can help non-citizens who cannot afford an attorney. But certainly, if you have any resources at all, I would very much recommend that you find a private immigration attorney to pay a small fee to and to get some advice before they make a decision about their next step.
Nicole Hallett is a director of the Immigrants Rights Clinic at the University of Chicago Law School. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and 5 specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org.
Okay, now it's time to get into the top local stories of the day. At the table to help me break them down, Claire Lane, WBEZ Morning Edition anchor, Chicago Sun-Times reporter Mary Norkel, and Elvia Malagon, who covers health for the Sun-Times. Now, one of today's top stories, well, it was that the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services just announced that it'll be freezing $10 billion in funding from 5 states controlled by Democrats, including Illinois. Elvia had the details.
Yeah, late last night, the Illinois Department of Health and Human Services did confirm that they did receive a letter from the federal government announcing the pause in funding. So what that means for us here, that's about $1 billion that the state receives. And it's for a couple of different programs, but a lot of them involve children. Some of them provide cash assistance for households with children. Some of them are social service programs for children who are considered high or at risk. And then others are for childcare for working parents. So this is certainly going to affect parents who live here in the state, and we'll have to see how this all plays out. You know, what we've heard on the national level is that some of this is because of questions of fraud, but we haven't really heard much about where that's coming from here specifically.
Kind
in
of
Illinois.
A running theme, isn't it, Alvia? You know, a decision is made, and then we still have to figure out the pieces involved.
Yeah, and I mean, officials were saying here that this is just going to cause more confusion, kind of like what we saw last fall with SNAP recipients who kind of were, you know, waiting, and they were going to get the money, then they weren't. So we're probably going to see something similar here.
Yeah. Claire, the arts have also lost a lot of federal funding. We've talked about that quite a bit on the program. Now, Chicago is trying to make up for some of that lost funding. This is through its Arts Relief Fund program. What should we know?
So 50 Chicago arts, culture, and humanities, nearly 50, we should say 49, have been selected by Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson and the Department of Cultural Affairs to receive this grant money. This was just yesterday. So the funding, as you mentioned, will help replace a lot of that lost federal income and maintain access to creative experiences for Chicago residents, also for visitors. Mayor Johnson going as far to say that our cultural groups are essential to the fabric of our neighborhoods. And awards range from tens to $50,000. So these are groups like the American Writers Museum, right. Hyde Park Jazz Fest, Mexican Folkloric Dance Company, also the Joffrey.
Right. Oh, right. So the popular ones, right? And the not so.
Big and small.
Big and small. Yeah. Now, switching gears here, Mary, because we all know Operation Midway Blitz. It's had a huge impact on our region. It still is having an impact, possibly nowhere more, though, than West Suburban Broadview.
Yes.
So talk to us about how they're gearing up for the possibility of more detentions and protests in 2026.
Yes, yes. So obviously Broadview, with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement building out there, has kind of been thrust into the spotlight. Mm-hmm. And most recently, you know, things are ever changing, but most recently, the Village Board in Broadview approved a proposal essentially making amendments to its zoning laws pertaining to prisons and detention centers, which would include any new ICE facilities. Basically, they're tightening up restrictions on where those facilities can be based, and they also will now have to obtain a special uses permit. And a lot of this obviously is in response to ongoing and continued protests out in Broadview. We were there every day for much of the fall.
Yeah, it was a daily scene. I mean, remember, it was the Fridays at first, but then it just everything just started to escalate.
Right, right. And, you know, it definitely was spilling over, at least its effects were spilling over into the nearby neighborhoods. Nearby businesses and residents were kind of flagging things that were affecting them from going about their daily lives. And now the Village of Broadview is working to mitigate that with any potential new buildings. This all comes amid reports that the Trump administration is looking for more immigration facilities in the area.
Right, right. Speaking of protests, Claire, folks were protesting outside People's Gas this week. What's going on?
Right, so protesting something that everybody hates or loves to hate, a rise of bills, right? Heating bills. So People's Gas is proposing a rate hike that would increase the average household natural gas tab.
I am still trying to get over the ComEd hikes.
I know.
And now People's
Was very real. So this is an average of $11 a month, which is not nothing.
Right.
So sometimes reporting that the gas utility provider submitted this request to state regulators for the rate hike just yesterday. The request comes, we should know, 2 years after the Illinois Commerce Commission granted People's Gas a record high $306 million rate increase. So yesterday, this was groups of consumer advocates, also community activists, protesting the hike outside of the People's Gas headquarters downtown.
What else are you watching today, Claire?
So this is for rideshare users. Many of us use those.
My ears are open.
Right?
Go ahead.
Uber, Lyft. Across sort of large parts of the city, we are now going to have to pay an extra $1.50 surcharge. This is essentially depending where you're going, where your ride starts, where it ends. Law Club reporting these are solo rideshare users traveling to or from what the city is deeming large zone. So previously this was kind of, you know, commerce areas downtown, but now it's expanded this.
Is there some kind of map we can look at?
Presumably, yes, we will have something to come. But this is big parts of the north side. The West Loop has become a big part of this area. Fulton Market District, Pilsen, even Hyde Park, where UFC is, are going to be charged this additional $1.50 per trip fee.
Oh,
and this is every day for solo surcharge, 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Shared trips will be a 60-cent addition, and that's only on weekdays.
All right, something else we've been talking about on the program this week is that flu surge. But the U.S. is also experiencing a measles outbreak, the worst that we've seen in over 30 years. And all this is going on as state and federal health officials argue over vaccine guidelines. So lots of health news keeping Elvia busy, I'm sure. Now, yesterday on In the Loop, we sat down with Dr. Brian Borra from the Chicago Department of Public Health. I want to play a little bit of what he had to say about this measles uptick.
We've seen in the United States more measles cases this year, last year, 2025, than we've seen in the last 30 years. And I think a big reason behind that is this loss of trust in the vaccine. So I'm worried that we will see those types of trends for other diseases moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, again, we do a lot of preparation work. Chicago's in a very good place, actually, as far as coverage rates for the measles vaccine. And we continue to improve numbers as best we can.
So give us the very latest here, Elvia. How worried should we be at this point?
We haven't seen any new cases so far. However, public health officials have been worried about this. Last fall, right before school started, which is when sometimes a lot of kids will get vaccinated ahead of the school year, there was a big push, in particular for measles, just because there has been so much misinformation. And even then, you started to see some outbreaks happening in other parts of the country. So it's definitely something that public health officials here are worried about. I know the county has been doing free vaccine clinics for pretty much like anyone can go there. And you could get not just that, but a variety of other vaccinations. And yeah, just this week, federal officials changed the guidance and reduced the number of vaccines recommended for children. Measles is actually still one of the recommended ones, but the flu is not.
And we've seen what's been happening with
that,
right?
We're in the middle of a really big spike
in
the flu
spike
here.
Yeah, and I think we just reported our first death.
Yes. Yeah.
The state of Illinois was a child.
Yeah, right? It was a child death. We don't know too much information, just because for privacy reasons they didn't release information. We don't know if the child was vaccinated or was not vaccinated, their age, or even what county they lived in.
Still, I want to remind folks of what I learned from the pair of doctors I had on the program yesterday. I mean, wash your hands. Sounds like very basic information, but right now you can't be too careful. Wash your hands. Wear a mask whenever you can, if you do feel sick, and just stay home. Don't go to work, right? Stay home and get yourself feeling much better. A lot of folks are also worried, Elvia, about their healthcare premiums increasing in 2026. We talked a lot at the end of the year about ACA subsidies expiring. Medicaid recipients are concerned about changes to that program. Fill us in.
Yeah, yesterday, Cook County officials had an event, a kind of PSA, just because they've been getting a number of calls from people who either think they're no longer eligible for Medicaid or think the program may not even exist, just because there's a lot of misinformation going around. So county officials are stressing that the program is still exists. If you were eligible for the program, you know, as of like they said, you know, yesterday, you're still eligible today. And really, some of this confusion is deriving from last summer, the big tax overhaul bill that was passed is going to make some changes to Medicaid. But the county is stressing that those changes aren't expected to start until January of 2027, so a year from now. And they're also still grappling with what it will mean. They will have to create pretty much like a new system to meet these new work requirements. And people are going to have to basically verify that they're eligible for Medicaid more frequently. So it is going to be a bit of a paperwork headache.
It's going to get a little bit more complicated to get Medicaid.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean, right now, there's about 3.9 million people in the state who rely on Medicaid for healthcare coverage. And there are estimates that the state is saying maybe as many as like 190,000 people to 360,000 people may lose out just because of these changes.
And that's significant. That's a huge, huge amount. Well, Elvia touched on 2027, Mary, so why don't we go there as well? I know 2026 just started, but that mayoral election that we've got coming up next year, it's making headlines already.
Yes,
what's
it
going
is.
On?
Yeah. Congressman Mike Quigley yesterday announced, or he didn't make a formal announcement, but he did mention plans to run to unseat Brandon Johnson as Chicago mayor. He mentioned that on WGN radio. And we don't know too much yet, but it's sure to keep us busy and
possible
keep
Mayor
us watching.
Mike Quigley.
Right.
Can you imagine?
Right. And he's, you know, expected to join a handful of, you know, Illinois political heavy hitters ready to, you know, vie for that seat.
Oh, yeah. So he's going to make the formal announcement, he says, sometime after the primary.
Yes.
After the March primary.
Yes.
A lot of people are getting excited. Some possibly a little anxious. We've got Saturday night's Bears playoff game coming up. This is against the Packers.
Yes.
I mean, what do you think? What's going to happen?
I mean, we'll see.
Are you a fan?
I shouldn't even say this. I'm a Packers fan. Lifelong.
No.
I know.
I knew that. It was part of my evil scheme.
Yeah. So I can't even pretend to be unbiased here. But, you know, aside from it being a playoff game, this rivalry has been obviously decades and decades, but also this year it has been kind of bitter. You know, we had that late game with the overtime touchdown and, you know, I think it's definitely been ramping up as we look toward this playoff game. So people are excited and, anxious.
Yeah. We talked yesterday to Bears legend Mike Singletary on the program, and he's excited. He's looking forward to Saturday. Of course, he wants the Bears to win.
Of course.
Not, you know, but you're doing something really cool soon. You're about to interview the oldest living Chicago Bear. Tell us
more. That's this afternoon. I'm going to talk with a former offensive lineman who played in the 50s, John DeMore. He is 92. He's believed to be the oldest alum of the program. And we're going to talk Bears Packers. We're going to talk about his time on the team, what he wants to see from Soldier Field. You know, there's so much Bears news to talk about. So,
oh my goodness. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I'm going to pass you some questions before you do that interview.
Yeah.
I got to know more.
Right. No, I know. I'm prepping for a long interview and a really interesting one. So keep an eye on the Sun-Times and BEZ sites for that.
Sounds amazing. WBEZ's Claire Lane, Elvia Malagon, and Mary Norkel of the Sun-Times.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Linnea Dominic, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in-the-loop. Thanks for listening.